Welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio. Good morning and welcome to probably one of our last couple of days focused on the book of Ecclesiastes. Honey, it's good to have you back in front of the microphone.
Thank you. It is good to be back, and it feels a little bittersweet to me. We've had a lot of interesting conversations over the book of Ecclesiastes.
I'm discovering, after doing a couple of these series, that because you invest time in thinking about it and sharing and recalling the conversations you've had with someone you love, when you get to the end of it, it's like literally wrapping up one of your favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. You want it to keep going.
Yeah.
I remember having that experience with every one of the books of Narnia when our kids were like between the ages of 8 and 12. And we get to the end of a chapter and like, no, not the end of a chapter because they have to go to bed. And then there's the end of the book. Oh, it was a big deal.
Yes.
So we always say, end of chapter, end of book. And what a boo-hoo happened with all the kids when we got to end of chapter, end of book, end of series.
Mm.
And you close at last page on the last book of the Chronicles of Narnia. It was a sad farewell. I mean, literally, were tears.
Yes, and they always begged for more.
And when there's no more to share, it was sad.
It was.
I'm beginning to feel that way about these books of the Bible after we spent time with them. Not just that we've read the book and it's an important book or something that is needed for your spiritual growth, mm-hmm. but that you spent time with it.
We've invested a lot in these books that we've been reading and these conversations that we've had. So it is meaningful to us on that level as well.
And who would have imagined that the book of Ecclesiastes with only 12 short chapters mm-hmm. would become such a year-long kind of project for us. But now we come to the end, or at least the beginning of the end, or perhaps the end of the beginning.
Okay.
We are going to focus now on chapter 12, the first 8 verses. I don't want to belabor many points about the series before we jump into the ending here, but I do want to say 2 things about this last chapter. It is full of imagery,
mm-hmm.
and much more so even than the chapters that preceded it, because it talks about the person who's writing it, and he's asking us to get inside the imagination of the metaphors. The things that are going to be described are not necessarily external. They're not about the world around you. They're about the world within,
mm-hmm.
the things you are experiencing, and the serious fears that we all have in facing our death.
Mm, right.
He starts with the young man, ends with the old, and then we have to turn the corner and see, what do we get at the end of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that it's on parallel. It's not just about the inward man, the metaphors about the man. It's about seeing life, imagining those scenes. What would it be like at the last moment of life here on earth?
Mm-hmm.
Then what comes after? So that's what this chapter of Ecclesiastes focuses on. So honey, go ahead and read for us the first 8 verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 12.
So remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of adversity come and the years approach when you will say, I have no delight in them. Before the sun and the light are darkened, and the moon and the stars and the clouds return after the rain, on the day when the guardians of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, the women who grind cease because they are few, and the ones who watch through the windows see dimly. The doors at the street are shut while the sound of the mill fades. When one rises at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song grow faint. Also, they are afraid of heights and dangers on the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper loses its spring, and the caperberry has no effect. For man is headed to his eternal home, and mourners will walk around in the street. Before the silver cord snapped, and the golden bowl is broken, and the jar is shattered at the spring, and the wheel is broken into the well, and the dust returns to the earth as it once was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Everything is futile.
And that seemed like a desperate and mournful way to end the chapter and the book.
Mm.
There is more, of course, but it's not in the voice of the king who wrote these verses. But first to the imagery, honey. When we've read and studied on this, thousands of years have passed since these words were committed to papyrus.
Mm-hmm.
The hint is that the king himself went out of his way to actually, with his own hand, write some of these. And the scribe at the end of the book kind of indicates that. I can imagine being at death's door and really thinking hard, did I really get down everything I wanted to write to make sure my family knows what my intentions, my wishes are, and what my mind and heart were at that time? There seems to be some of that last will and testament idea happening here. And all of the imagery, people have gone back and mined this for thousands of years.
Right.
And they keep seeing echoes of ancient understandings of the parts of the man, what makes up the person that you are, physically, spiritually, and mentally. And most of these images have to do with the physical frame failing. Mm-hmm. Let's go through those as quick as we can, one at a time.
Well, at the beginning of the chapter, he talks about how you begin to stoop and the women cease their grinding. And the ones who watch the window, their eyes grow dim and they get heavy or fat. The lethargy of the grasshopper after it's eaten too much. Yeah. The hearing grows faint because you can't hear the singing of the birds anymore.
Now, honey, these images can be about the external world as perceived by the person who is decaying and is getting decrepit. There are also images for the inward man in your experience, like the windows are referring to the eyes.
Right.
Give some examples of that contrast of the outside world to the inside world.
Well, the king talks about things that have stimulated him in the past, have given him energy, have given him desire. Talks about the caper berry not working, and that was used as an aphrodisiac in those times. This was really intriguing to me to kind of research what all this stuff meant, because sometimes we just read through this and kind of let it fly by, and we don't really research what the meaning is. We don't know what it means for the caper berry to be losing its effectiveness on us. We don't know what it means for the windows to grow dim. We just think, oh, well, his windows are dirty, he needs to clean them. Yeah. For us in the modern world, it is a bit different because we can get glasses or contacts or have laser surgery done on our eyes or other things that help that. They didn't have that in the time this was written. So those things happen maybe at a younger age even. I mean, I think I'm young and I wear glasses to help with my vision. But the thing that intrigued me, really piqued my attention, was talking about the silver cord and the golden bowl, the earthen vessel. And I thought, what on earth does that mean? So I looked up a commentary on those things. The Benson commentary, which was from BibleHub.com, if you're interested in that, talks about the silver cord being loosed or snapped. That's referencing the spinal cord. So that is what connects our whole body together, is what the ancients believed. The spinal cord was the connection that we had in our body that kind of held our body top to bottom together. But it was also referencing a spiritual connection. If the spinal cord is snapped, or the silver cord is snapped, that releases our soul from our body. That's what they believed.
Yeah. And probably not so far from a literal understanding of the physiology versus the metaphysicalness of us. Mm-hmm. The idea of soul and spirit and body. Literally speaking, a flexible or elastic cord within your body that literally would give it tension and keep it upright is not so hard to understand. So even if you understood the spinal cord to be nothing more than a rubber band that held your legs on to your head, that would have meaning to you because it connects both of them. Mm-hmm. Of course, speaking of nerves, it is literally the elastic cord that enables these things to communicate with each other electrically. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand what electricity was back then, of course, but the idea that will could be transmitted through two parts of your body to do its thing, they understood that perfectly.
And calling it silver gives it some value.
Yes.
It also refers to the color because it is a bright white color. Even in a dead body, it is white. So it looks silver to them. And they're giving it value because it is an important part of our body.
And it lifts up something that is gold. Mm-hmm. What does that refer to?
The golden bowl refers to our brain, which I thought was super intriguing. The teacher says the golden bowl is broken. It's a reference to our brain function. Hmm. And they believed that it was the most valuable. So it was given the name golden bowl. And it's kind of shaped like a bowl. And it has kind of a yellow color. So it refers to a very valuable part of our body. And when their mind is broken, when they get old, we think of people with dementia. We think of people that just have failing senses because their body is getting old and they don't have all of their functions. Their brain is just tired. I think of myself when I'm physically tired, my golden bowl feels broken. It feels like it's not functioning properly. Or for you, for instance, your stroke. You had a stroke 10 years ago, and your golden bowl was broken. It was cracked in a place that affected your memory. It affected your ability to function physically and mentally and emotionally. And it took a long time. It's been taking all these years for you to regain those things and to heal and to repair your golden bowl. So that is a very valuable part of our physical body, our emotional, our mental, our spiritual body.
And for me, of course, we talked about this on programs in the past. I didn't feel like I was being healed. Mm-hmm. Not just because it was frustrating, but because it felt like God was revealing to me as I prayed in the capacity I had during the time that the stroke was at its acute phase, that he was not going to heal me because things had died. I was going to be resurrected, and that the parts of me that were not coming back would never come back. They would go to him. But there was something new he could do in me, but it had to come from him to me. And so my understanding of what it means to recover from a stroke or a major traumatic injury like that is more in the sense of resurrection power than it is about medical healing. And I still feel that intensely even today, that that is the real truth about what happened for me. And it's my specific experience and testimony. It's not making a medical diagnosis here.
Right.
But his experience as the king, looking forward to what would become of his body. Remember that he is the temple builder. If it's the Solomon that we're talking about here, if this really is the author of Ecclesiastes, which many people believe he was, his sense of what it takes to build the temple and what it takes to maintain the temple and what eventually becomes of temples is something he feels very personally.
Right.
You can't think of Solomon without joining the concept and the importance of the temple to the nation Israel with the person of Solomon. For all of his wisdom, which turned out to be more eternal than the temple itself, they were intertwined, and both were seen as being eternal because of their importance and the function they had. Today, we think about the body itself is the temple of the living God, and we're taught that in the New Testament.
Right.
So we don't need a physical temple to do anything for us anymore. We have God present. And yet there's a sense of someday even that temple will crumble.
Right.
And then we get these extraordinary promises that the temple itself will be resurrected. Friends, for almost 78 years now, Compassion Radio has been committed to bringing you the truth about what God is really doing in the world and how He is bringing about the salvation, redemption, life, and growth of His kingdom wherever it is to be found. In a couple months, I will have been in this chair before this microphone for four of those 78 years. I'm grateful for the opportunity and humbled by the responsibility. I could not have imagined how many momentous changes were hiding right around the corner when I said yes to this job. Even now, I wouldn't change it for the world, but it's also fair to say that it's brought about challenges that have tried the very fabric of my faith. So much has changed and is changing in this world. At the same time, I'm discovering in a deeper way how absolutely consistent God is in times of trial. Here's the challenge before us in 2021. We'll be taking on bigger, more ambitious, more important projects than we have ever done before, bringing the compassion of Christ into the very center of the world's greatest conflicts. To get there, we need to raise some serious support and to do it soon. Once international travel opens back up, we'll need to have raised an additional $100,000 above our current giving in order to go and to give. For 78 years, when we face a challenge like this, we've done two things. One, we ask God what He wants. And two, we tell our friends what we need. Today, we're doing both. God is opening doors to see what He's doing in currently closed countries and join that work. I'm saying yes. And now I'm sharing the specific need with you so you can say yes, too. And there are still thousands of Bibles we still need to send through our friends at Bibles for the World. It is essential that we raise this new amount of $100,000 this quarter, or we can't proceed with any new outreach and relief programs. So I'll ask you, will you help? Just call today with your first gift and consider making it monthly. If you can, I'll be glad to send you a brand new Amazon Echo Dot or Google Home Mini so you can follow our progress each day and hear the Compassion Radio broadcast whenever is the best time for you. Call us. 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. If you're on the move right now, you can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to make your gift immediately. God bless you and your growing faith in 2021. And now, back to our discussion on Ecclesiastes chapter 12. For all of his wisdom, which turned out to be more eternal than the temple itself, they were intertwined, and both were seen as being eternal because of their importance and the function they had. Today we think about the body itself is the temple of the living God, mm-hmm. and we're taught that in the New Testament.
Right.
So we don't need a physical temple to do anything for us anymore. We have God present. And yet there's a sense of someday even that temple will crumble.
Right.
And then we get these extraordinary promises mm-hmm. that the temple itself will be resurrected. So in other words, the eternality of the temple is still true, but it's going to be true in you.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that from this side of the cross. So that's how we end up this almost forlorn lament of anticipation in the life of the writer of Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read it from our modern translation that we've been working on as an accompaniment to our Bible study. Again, this is not meant to replace anything in your Bible, but there's a lot of latitude in understanding the phrases because they are in an ancient Hebrew that is moderately understood in modern day. We have to trust that God's Spirit can inspire us to even get to the depths of what the original words meant, why Solomon would spend so much time crafting certain phrases. So here's Ecclesiastes chapter 12 in our Bible study, which again is available on our website in our podcast section. If you'd like a copy of this for your own Bible study, please download it. It's free. While you're still young, remember who created you and why. Even when evil comes, you were not created for it. Even when it tries to steal the joy of living and you struggle to find meaning in it at all, don't give in. When troubles darken the sun and thick clouds cover the moon and stars, when the downpour finally stops but the sky is still dark, when the whole household is subdued, when everyone around you is contorted with worries, when the brave are shaking in their boots, when the most reliable don't show up for work, when every window is a cave of shadows, when the shops are shut and the doors are barred to empty streets, when the grinding wheel goes silent, when the sound of birds is the only thing that announces the dawn, when the sweet music of life is now a dirge, when mysterious forces cause fear from above, when the thought of stepping outside causes you to wring your hands, when the almond tree has dropped its flowers and the fruit comes late, when the grasshopper hasn't the strength to hop, when the caper fruit can't get the blood moving anymore, then comes the time to make the final journey home and set the mourners to their wailing. Now the silver cord is loosed, the golden bowl crushed, the jar shattered at the well, the pulley broken over the cistern. Now the dust settles, and the body sinks down into the earth from which it came. The spirit, however, returns to God who sent it on its journey. Ah! How futile it all seems, so said the teacher. So much futility. That's not the note I want to end the program on, but it's the scripture we want to end the program on.
I want to just touch base again with the imagery here that Solomon brings up. He says, the jar is shattered at the well. The ancients believed that the jar was the vessel that carried nourishment, carried the water, that within your body, the jar could have been the heart. That it
holds the blood.
It holds the blood and it, you know, it releases the blood into your system and the vessels and arteries take it to where it needs to go. And then the pulley that's broken over the cistern refers to basically our arteries that take the blood throughout the body. And if those arteries are clogged or broken or unhealthy, they don't pump the blood like they need to. They can't carry the water because they're broken. That's the imagery that we see here.
Or the macro symbol of the person pulling up the water could be a metaphor for your heart doing its work.
Right.
So the person pulling on the pulley is pulling the blood through the body.
Mm-hmm. And we see that it's broken here in this verse that describes all of these things being done.
And even to this day, one of the definitions of death is that the heart has truly and completely ceased doing its work.
So Solomon is lamenting these things. He calls it futile. Everything in life is futile. We've seen that phrase so many times.
Yeah.
Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, we've heard him repeatedly say, this is futile, that is futile. And I think he's just referring to, after having read so many times that he says this, that he's referring to these pursuits that just exhaust you. these things that we try to do that we think are going to bring life to us, these aphrodisiacs that we use to give us energy. I'm not saying that that stuff is wrong if you're taking medication for things, or if you're taking extra vitamin D, if you're in parts of the world that it's dark all the, you know, during the winter.
You're exercising hard,
you're
keeping
exercising
muscles in shape.
And yeah. Those are not wrong things.
No, not at all.
But if those are the things that we pursue to fulfill us,
or to give us a sense that we are going to live forever,
then they are futile.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to live forever in this physical body. So we have to allow for that in our minds. We have to prepare ourselves for that. And I don't mean in a morbid way, but there are things that I can't do now in my late 50s that I could do in my 20s. It's just not physically possible for me anymore. My body just doesn't want to do them anymore. It just can't. And that's okay. When we look at how our bodies age and what our purpose in life is, it's not to have exuberant, strong, perfect physical body. That's not our goal.
He gives us the signposts along the way to sense these are the indicators that it's about time for your body to give up the ghost, as we would say in modern English. And that imagery even comes from Ecclesiastes. When the silver cord is severed, we give back to God what is God's. And God himself says, from dust you came, the dust you will return, referring to the frame of man.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something else about the spark of divinity, his presence, the capacity to know him and to enjoy him forever, as the Westminster Catechism makes clear. Our chief end is to love him, enjoy him forever.
Forever.
And that's a promise in there, that there is a forever.
Yeah.
And so even now, Solomon's not shying away from that promise, but it still is a mystery to him.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to truly be in God's presence? What does the temple even mean at that point when you're no longer with your own body?
Yeah.
But to be present with the Lord is to be in the temple. We see him clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that is as close as your next heartbeat, there's still something about God in our lives in this body where he remains a bit of a mystery to us.
Mm-hmm.
He's not predictable. We can't understand him. We don't perceive him really in his fullness.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a hope. If there's anything that getting older in life does bring to us, it is the ability to appreciate what is really eternally true.
Mm-hmm.
In my 20s, I would not have cared much to think about what does it mean to acknowledge that this body will be given back to the earth and my soul will be given back to God. I would have ignored that or tried to put that aside. At this point in my life, I think more about, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
Who is God really to me? Who am I really to him?
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do with the time we have left before we meet face to face?
Well, making the most of our time is an important aspect of growing older as
And those
well.
Are the first verses in this chapter. He says, remember who created you and why while you're still young.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Contemplate it while you still have time to think about these things. Mm-hmm. Ruminate, which means literally chew your cud until you get all the value out of it.
One of the questions that we ask in the Bible study that we've posted online is, what should I remember? Considering that is an important part of, I don't want to say New Year's resolutions, but I think it is an important thing to do, to take that inventory multiple times throughout the year. What is it that I should remember about my life, about what God has done, how I've seen him be generous to me, and how he can help me to be generous to others? And what do I do with the time I have left? What if I wasn't generous as a young person? What if I wasn't serving God as a young person? Well, it's not too late to start being generous or to consider the things that God has called us to, even as we grow older. In fact, it's more important. What do I want to use the remaining time I have for? So I don't sit at the end of my life and say, it's all futile. It's all futility.
Just yesterday, you and I were listening to a wonderful lecture in the January series at Calvin University, where they'd invite in great philosophers, influencers in the world to talk about the big issues. And yesterday we talked a lot about the importance of living a life of virtue versus vice.
Mm-hmm.
And what does vice really mean? So the professor went through these issues and said, this is why we have these seven deadly sins kind of put into the vernacular. This is how it became this. She gave her students an exercise which made them get outside themselves to see themselves honestly.
Right.
Encourage them to imagine yourself in your grave, and there's a memorial service. There are going to be these people speaking of you, giving your eulogy, telling people honestly about your life, what it amounted to. Write their testimony about you, allowing that third-person voice to speak truth. Because when you see them speak ridiculous things about you, you know they're not true. And somehow it enables you to be more honest about what you really understand your life to be worth and what you have accomplished up to this point. And from there, you can be more honest about setting goals for the change you want to make in the years to come. I think that Solomon is doing some of that for us in this chapter. He's asking us to recalibrate, to consider the time you have and not waste the time you do.
So that goes back to, what do I do with the time I have? How do I continue a life of service to God? How do I pursue generosity?
And do I want to?
And do I want to? And if I didn't do it in my youth, is it too late to pursue it now? I would say no. Yeah. It's never too late to pursue generosity, to pursue right relationship with God and with others. Never too late.
As right as can be, make the days you have righteous. And be reckoned unto you as righteousness, as the word says, because you want those who love you or those who know you to look at your life and say, there went somebody who was after the heart of God the way Solomon's father was known as being a man after God's own heart. And we'll leave it there for today. Next week, we'll come back and read the conclusion of the matter. Thank you so much for spending this much time with us in Ecclesiastes. We'll see you again tomorrow on Compassion Radio. Call us today, friends, and let us know you're standing with us in 2021. 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're on the web 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. We've got some great gifts as a thank you for joining us in this adventure. Just ask about them when you call. It's time, friends, to join us for some great adventures in faith this year. We'll see you tomorrow.